Yeah, last week toward the end, we were discussing, this concept of Kedusha. She'er Kedushanu Mimitzvotav V'Tzivanu Al Metilat Yadayim. And it brings up two issues in very close context. One is Kedusha, and one is Tahara. And Kedusha is a word like bracha, define Kedusha.
Well, obviously, the simple definition is holiness.
Define holiness.
Separateness, separation.
Okay, a Metzorah is sent, right, somebody with Tzaraz, is sent out of the camp. He's separated.
Mm-hmm.
He's not holy.
No, he's not, no.
So, Kedusha has a...
Prostitute is a...
Well, I actually...
Right,
but I actually think that's a different reason. I think a prostitute is a zona. A prostitute for Asherah worship became a Kedusha. Like, a Kedusha was what the Canaanites called temple prostitutes, and that's why it's different than a zona. I don't know if that's a good example, because there were... allegedly holy prostitute, so I don't know what you could prove from that. That's why I picked the...
We don't get that.
No. But that's why I brought the example of a Metzorah. And define Tahara.
Purity?
Right. Tahara, we're always told, is purity, and then we're told it doesn't really mean purity.
Mm-hmm.
Until you get to learning the menorah, where the menorah has to be made of zahav tahor, which is pure gold. So the word tahara does mean purity, even though we're always told it doesn't mean purity. So what is the concept of tahara, of purity? What could be impure or adulterated, you know, like the gold has dross, right? What could be impure and what could it be impure with in order for the word tahara to make sense? But to get back to Kedusha, because I think the two questions are related, the idea of Kedusha meaning separate, we find in Parsha Kedoshim. Parsha Kedoshim, it says, Kedoshim Tihyu, you should be holy, which is where the Parsha gets its name. And the Saras Kohanim just puts in two words, Perushim Tihyu, you should be Parsha, you should be separate. Exactly, your instinctive answer. So Rashi connects this Pasuk to Parsha Semor. The end of Parsha Semor has all the laws of arayos, of sexual proprietariness, that's not the right word, sexual appropriateness, and Rashi understands the Torah's Kohanim, the Medrash on this pasuk, to mean that that if somebody keeps all these laws of intimacy, then they are kadosh. So in Rashi's understanding of the word Kedusha is inherent in the person. And as long as you don't mess it up, you're Kedush. The Ramban says, Kadesh et atzmecha, sanctify yourself, but mashem mutar lach, with something that is permitted to you. So Kedusha requires going beyond the call of duty. And this comes up with idioms like a maneuver versus a Torah, that one shouldn't be disgusting with the permission of the Torah. That there's an idea that there's an ethic beyond the Torah that one has to conform to, and that Kedusha, holiness, comes from going beyond the letter of the law. So it's not just, it's inherent and you have to protect it, but Kedusha is something earned. Now, Rav Shimon Shkaf, who is somebody I guess I was prejudiced to like the opinions of, because he had a Talmud who was my Rebbe. He has a book called Ali Shur, which is an introduction to... Shari Yosher, which is the laws of determining doubt. Suffolk and majority and Chazaka and all that kind of law. But the introduction is a philosophical piece. So he points out that there's a basic problem with this notion of Kedusha, as either of them defined it. Because the rest of the pasuk is, Kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani, because I am kadosh. There's no purpose or meaning to the idea that Hashem restrains himself. Hashem has nothing to be restraining from. And more so, if Hashem would restrain himself, we wouldn't exist. Right? If Hashem would withdraw from something that was improper, then that thing would cease. So what does this notion of separation mean when we're dealing with Ki Kadosh Ani, when we're talking about Hashem's holiness? So in Parsha Shkolim we're told that you have to take a half a shekel, and the shekel is described as a shekel HaKodesh, a holy shekel. And the Ramban explains that these shkolim are holy because they were used for holy purposes. They were used for the construction of the Mishkan, for buying karbanos, for repairs on Yerushalayim, for Pidyon HaBen. And Rabbi Bachya continues and says that all mitzvot are the source of holiness, and some mitzvot require this money, therefore this money is holy. The Ramban then will give a second example. Lashon HaKodesh is called Lashon HaKodesh because it's used for mitzvot. It's the language in which Hashem said, Yihi Or, let there be light. He gave us the Torah in Lashon HaKodesh. Tanakh was written in Lashon HaKodesh. It's the language that we use for naming until Yiddish caught on. But traditionally it was used for naming people. Actually, we had some Greek names before them. But in any case, in the days of Tanakh, it's right? So in that sense, it's Lashon HaKodesh. But the Ramban noted that the Rambam, Maimonides, gives a different definition for why it's called Lashon HaKodesh. In Mor Nevuchim, Rambam says it's holy because there are no words there are no scatological or sexual words in Hebrew, at least in biblical Hebrew. But if you want to discuss these things, you have to use euphemisms because the words didn't exist. So in the Ramban was saying that the language is holy because it's used for mitzvos, and the Rambam is saying that the language is holy because it lacks tools for expressing tumah. So, what's the difference between these perspectives? So we could say that the Ramban is following his normal approach that we saw in his argument with Rashi. So according to Ramban, holiness is something you have to work for and acquire. Therefore, if you go beyond the call of duty, right, you have holiness. If the language is used for a mitzvah, you have holiness. Ramban seems to be holding like Rashi, that if you don't engage in tumah, right, if you restrain from tumah, there's a natural holiness that shows through. Rav Shimon Shkup says that there isn't much we know about God. He's not the first to say this. Most of the things we know about God, we know only what he isn't. We know that he can't get sick. We know there's nothing he can't do. We know he has no location. We know he's not associated with time. We know he's indivisible. But in terms of positive statements, there's very little we could say about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, we know we exist. And therefore we know that he's the creator. So the one thing that we can know about him is that he wants to bestow upon others. That he created others, he does good for others, and if we can't say anything about Hashem himself, we could say that in terms of his actions, he wants to do good for others. So he understands the pasuk of Kadoshim Tiyu, Ki Kadoshani, to be just as I am fully committed to giving to others, so too you should be fully committed to giving to others. And that the definition of Kadosh is to be committed to God's good role in the, you know, God's role in creating us. And therefore, the highest, you know, the source of holiness is to serve others, to bestow upon others the way Hashem bestows upon us. Which yields the notion of Kedusha to be not every kind of separation. So we don't have to say the Masorah is Kadosh. Rather, Kedusha is to be separated for a purpose. Tumah, we said, was something that prevents Kedusha, which is why you have to wash your hands before you serve in the Beis HaMikdash. right? There's the notion of going in the mikvah before entering Har Habayis. But they're not diametrically opposed. There's actually something I have to thank, I don't remember her name. She was the Minister of Education. A real anti-Orthodox woman. The Minister of Education in the 1990s.
Yeah.
Can't remember her name.
Yeah.
So she was talking about how could... She was arguing for giving up Chevron. She was saying, how could you consider Maris Machpelah to be holy? Because it's a burial site, and therefore Kohanim shouldn't be able to walk there. But her presumption... And what she pointed out to me that it got me to realize is that it's possible for something to be both Tameh and Kaddish. Although the two are anti-correlated, right? We usually get rid of Tumah as a preparation for Kaddusha. There are contexts in which it's possible for both to coexist. Terumah can't be eaten when it's Tameh. It doesn't become secular. The Kaddusha isn't lost. But it can't be eaten because... It can't be eaten in impurity, in Tumah, and it can't be eaten because it's Truma, so you end up with not being able to use it because it's both. But the basic, so they both come from notions of separation. A purity is separation from infiltration, from dross, from the example I given was Zahav Torah, that there's an idea of pure gold versus impure gold. But it's separation from. So the reason why Tara is a preparatory step, the pursuit of Tara is a preparatory step for engaging in Kedusha, is because before you separate yourself for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's purpose, you have to separate yourself from other purposes. So we separate from Tumah to get to Kedusha. And what are those other purposes? Well, if we look at the things that cause Tumah, you find that they're all related to the physicality of people, to death, to birth, to various emissions. There are things that, as Rav Hirsch puts it, can convince a person that he's only a body. That if you're not careful, you could be convinced that you're a victim of your body, that you're a physical being, that you're basically another mammal. So separation from that misconception is Tahara, and separation for a higher calling, therefore, is Kedusha. And that's how the two relate. So when we get to this mitzvah, this bracha, right, that's how we started. When we get to the bracha of Asher Kedusha Mitzvah, right, Mitzivanu, Al Mitzilas Yudayim. He made us Kadosh, and he commanded us that before we pursue Kedusha, we have to pursue Tahara.
Where's the commandment of
Al Mitzilas Yudayim? Commandment of Al Mitzilas Yudayim is Lo Sasuru. You shall not veer from what the sages tell you one way or the other. That is the commandment for Al Mitzilas Yudayim.
Okay.
Right, that's discussed. Usually that's discussed in Rabbi's sermon somewhere around Hanukkah time. How can you make a bracha Asher Kedushem Mitzvotzev Tzvan Elahavet Ner Shal Hanukkah? Where did God ever command us to light Hanukkah candles? So it was completed, you know, almost a millennium before Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
More than a millennium before Hanukkah. And the answer is, where it says that you have to listen to Chachamim. So, we have this thing that has to be separated from Tumah. I'm moving on to Ashi Yatzar, but I found a bridge, which was part of the reason why I wanted to revisit the subject. Where we have something that you have to be separated from, and something has to be separated to. When you get up in the mornings, what's the basic conflict? Get up in the morning, right? Or even better, when your teenager tries to get up in the morning, what's the basic conflict? On the one hand, he wants the comfort of your bed.
But you don't want to move.
You don't want to move. So on one hand, you have the pursuit of comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Your body wants to sleep. On the other hand, you have a need to accomplish things. And I said me very, very advisedly. Hey, people don't want to, life needs to have meaning. Right? So I think you could even, like, found the school of psychology on that. But life has to have meaning. Therefore, there's a pursuit of, so man has one, he has a need to pursue his physical needs. And two, he has, in the pulling him in the other direction, a need to have meaning. Right, do I shut off the alarm clock and go back to sleep, or do I make it to minion? And that's the typical dilemma waking up in the morning. Right? Who is being pulled? Like usually when you think of Yetzer HaTov and Yetzer HaRa, right? So there's the good side and the bad side. But here I just said you feel pulled in one direction or the other direction. So who is being pulled?
Me.
So basically what we're saying is there are three sides. Right? There's a side that wants creature comforts, the side that wants to accomplish something in life, and the me.
I have a headache already, please.
I'm sorry.
Well, if those two sides are part of me, I mean, they're not separate from me.
But you feel pulled by them.
Yeah, I'm pulled by, okay, I'm pulled by them, but that which is pulling me in these directions
is you.
Is
yes.
Me.
Yes.
It's not like there's three entities. There's one entity and two tendencies, if you will.
There's two pieces.
There's
one piece is one entity.
There's
only one entity.
Yeah, I would say the entity is one process, right? The process has three components.
Okay.
Right? There are three vectors pulling you, right?
Okay.
There's your will, right? Your I,
yeah,
with a capital letter I,
mm-hmm,
right? Your... Right? You have your that which is you because you have hormones and you're, dwelling in a physical housing. Then you have that higher calling, which, despite what my mother whispered, is not the superego. Because the superego is a recording of what society demands of you. Freud did not see human beings as having a need to be holy. And now I'm already jumping that bridge there, right? People didn't have a need to be committed to a higher purpose, which we defined as kedusha, right? Therefore, the only reason why somebody wouldn't satisfy his animal instincts is because society forces him to conform, and this is why his entire psychology is based on all these evil things we have to do to ourselves in order to fit expectation. Whereas in this model, what we're saying is that either way, you're fitting what your soul needs, right? Both sides are internal. It's which, how do you satisfy conflicting interests? So it's not me versus the world, or the world making me, right? In building the Mishkan, there are six kelim. There are six utensils in the Mishkan. Three of them have crowns, and three of them do not. The three that have crowns are the Aron, the Mizbeach HaZahav, the gold Mizbeach where they burned incense, and for the field day. Yep, that was his revenge.
Which is so cool.
Right, where they burn incense, and the third is the shulchan, the table where the bread was on. And on this, the Gemara links it to a Mishnah. There's a Mishnah, a famous Mishnah in Avos, that there are three crowns: the crown of Kohuna, right, of the priesthood, of Melucha, of the kingship, and of Torah. And the crown of Kohuna was given to Aaron, of Melucha to David, right, because every king has to come from David, and the crown of Torah can be grabbed by anyone. So the link, the connection is the table, right, the shulchan, which had food on it, had 12 loaves of bread that supported each other. They represented the king's need to satisfy the people's physical demands. I mean, that's the role of the king is to make sure society runs. So there's one lechem apanim, one showbread for each shevet. They support each other in piles. They have the king, the crown that represents the crown of merucha, of kingship. The crown of kahuna is on the mizbeach hazahav, because that is service, it's bringing things on the mizbeach. Mizbeach hazahav is even less tangible, because the thing being offered is a scent, not even animals, but the other mizbeach nechoshes. And that's the concept of kahuna, of serving in the Beis Hamikdash. The third crown on the Aron contains the luchos, contains the covenant between, well, what's left witness to the covenant between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and us. So that is the crown of Torah. And corresponding to these are the three that don't have crowns. There's a Mizbeach, which does not have a crown. It's used for sacrificing the korbanos, the animals. Right? There's the Kiyor for getting Tara, for getting purity. And the Menorah. Hold on. The Menorah, which is... Okay, the Menorah, which is Torah, because that's the light of the Torah, the seven classes of wisdom all pointing back toward the Torah. The second one is the Mizbeach Achitzon, which is Avodah, because that's where they serve the animals, same reason as the other one. And the third is the Kiyor, where we get purity from. Again, how did we define purity? We define purity as separation from physicality. So what we get is that there's actually three basic ideas. One being our relationship to this world and to the people in it. So our relationship to this world is one of purity, but we have to be committed to support the people in it. So our relationship to this world is the kiyor. Our relationship to the people in this world is the shulchan. Our relationship to avoda is the mizbeach nechoshes, is offering the sacrifice, the animals. But our relationship to the one in Shemayim is an intangible, is a spell. And the Torah is our relationship within ourselves, the world between your ears. And therefore is both the menorah, which is all the wisdoms, and the Torah, and which from which comes the Anan, which reveals Hashem's presence, the Kruvim, which show the closeness between people, all of that flowing from the Torah, because once you have the perfection of the self, then you could start perfecting how you relate to Hashem and how you relate to other people. So there's that three-part structure again that we have, that we saw when you wake up. There's the me, right, the self-identity, the world between my ears, which we associated with Torah, right? There's Avoda, and then there is the Gemilas Chasadim of the king and of being in this world. Which brings us to, and there are many more examples of that, but the point I think was made. With enough. I think there are enough examples there for the point to be made. Which brings us to the next three brachos in the Siddur. In our Siddurim, these brachos do not appear in this order. In the Siddurim, the Rishonim, you find that right after waking up, you may say Al Nitil Tadayim as a preparation for serving Hashem for the day. And then there is Asher Yatzar, right, which is a bracha on the health, on the maintenance of the body. Elokai Nishamash and Asatabi, the God and the purity, thanking God for the purity of my soul. And then Torah, right, Berachas HaTorah as a three-part unit, which you'll notice is a bracha on the maintenance of my body, a bracha on the loftiness and permanent purity of my neshama, and therefore my gateway into heaven, and of Torah, of my ability to study Torah and perfect myself, and that universe between my ears. So these three brachos actually create the tripod that Shimon HaTzadik discusses in the first Mishnah. Sorry, in the second Mishnah and others. Shlosh Devar Olam Amid, Ala Torah, right, which is Torah, Ala Voda, which is serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Val Gemilas Chatzadim, which we said was the crown of Kahuna. And so we start our day by reinforcing and asserting those forces that we put into play that give the universe and our day that existence. So that's the structure of these three brachos as the three brachos started. It's not 100% clear that that is the structure. We'll discuss that further when it comes to Elokai Neshamash and Nesatabi. There is a discussion among the Rishonim why that bracha doesn't start with the word Baruch. And according to some explanations, it's actually because Elokai Neshama is connected to the previous night's Hamapil Chavishena, and they bracket sleep, and therefore it's tied to going to bed the night before and not to Asher Yotzar. So Asher Yotzar, therefore, has two roles that you can perceive in it. One is, as I opened with, this idea that it's the perfection of the body as one of the three pillars upon which the world survives. The other possibility is that it's preparatory for the actual service of the day. That you can't do avoda while you need the facilities. One's not allowed to daven when he needs the facilities. So the first thing you have to do before davening is go to the bathroom, which means that the first tefillah you're saying is Asher Yatzar. Again, remembering that Modani didn't exist in the period of the Rishonim who are discussing how to order these brachos. Therefore, Alam Tzidayim, because that said as soon as you wake up, that takes care of the Tara for service, and then the second thing you have to take care of is your body so that you can make a bracha. And that's a second way of a more pragmatic and less poetic way, but it's still a second way discussed among the Rishonim for why the day starts with Asher Yatzar. Now the bracha of Asher Yatzar appears twice in your Gemara. It appears once in the Gemara and once later on in the volume in the Rif. And the version we have is actually a union of the two. So we don't say the text that's in the Gemara. We don't say the text that's in the Rif. We say all the words, whether it's found whether in the Gemara or in the Rif. Particularly if you say Afilu Sha'echos, because that's found in the Rif. There are three basic themes that various Rishonim find in the Bracha Asher Yatzar. I guess you could say some groups of Rishonim, which includes the Reb Ben Yochar, who has a parish on the Siddur. See, his name comes up a lot because it's very easy to find what he says on the Siddur. If you want to find what Rashi says on the Siddur, you have to sort of hope the Gemara discusses that Bracha, and then you can find that Bracha in the Gemara, and then you actually have to know that Gemara exists, which I don't always know, so that's harder. But the Reb Ben Yochar is easy because he's across the Siddur, and I have a collection of Perushim on the Siddur from the Rishonim, and he's there, and he says something, you know, pretty much on everything. So he focuses on the word Yatzar, to create, and he sees Asher Yatzar as being primarily about birth. So we talk about the Kavim Nekavim, and Chavulim Chavulim, these holes, and if one of them would, right, Imi Paseach Echad Mehem, if one of them opens, O Yisa Seim Echad Mehem, one of them closes. The Reb Ben Yochar says this is the miracle of birth. Before somebody is born, his navel is open. His lungs, his digestive system, both incoming and outtake, are closed. Right? The second he's born, the umbilical cord closes and the openings open. So he says, this is the miracle of birth that we are complimenting HaKadosh Baruch Hu for, that he created us with the ability for these things to close and open, and yet they don't at inappropriate times. And that's the chachma of health that, according to the Rebbe Ben Yaakov, the bracha focuses on.
It's very nice, but it's not to be quite accurate anymore.
Because
the digestive system is operational.
Uh-huh.
I think.
Well, I don't know if people eating.
Right.
I mean,
it's not really that important.
Okay. But that was the idea that he was conveying. The second theme is just that it's a bracha for health. That when we say rofei chol basar, we don't mean that Hashem cures the sick, because that's not chol basar. Thank God most people are not ill in noticeable ways. Everybody has aches and pains, everybody has their issues, everybody has recurring headaches or whatever it is that bugs them. But in terms of being ill and needing healing, the majority of people don't. So when we say rofei chol basar, what we're referring to is the ultimate act of refuah, and that is preventing illness. If you think of how many possible things that can go wrong, that by and large don't. And something that unfortunately people get used to very easily is that anything you get used to becomes a right instead of a privilege. If a person gets, you know, a $5,000 allowance every week, eventually the allowance becomes, I don't know, maybe it's little Jennifer Gates. Right? Little Jennifer Gates gets a $5,000 a week allowance. I don't know how old she is, I don't know how plausible that is, but they have the money, right? So let's pretend. After a year or so, she'd no longer be amazed at this huge amount of money. She'd be upset the week it doesn't come. Because we become acclimated to these things, right? Just working, just happening. And therefore, the week that it doesn't come, the week that you didn't get the gift, that's the big news. That's the big thing you complain about. Right, because you don't think about millions of things that go right. Right, my daughter was recently in a car accident. Not that recently anymore. So the car accident totaled the car. Right, so the Shul HaDavanan has a kiddush every week. So they're looking for a sponsor. I sponsored it that week. So they asked me why am I sponsoring the kiddush. So because I had this thought in mind. As I'm sponsoring the Kiddush because 9 of my children were nowhere near a car accident this week. Because that's a far bigger niece than the one of them who had a close call. Right? And maybe if we don't take these things for granted as opposed to, I mean, come on, I was paying lip service to the idea. I mean, I wish I would have actually thought on that level. But if we actually did think on that level, maybe God wouldn't need to remind us.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he sends us these close calls because you need to be reminded that there are so many times he doesn't even give us close calls. So that to my mind is what Rofei Chol Basar is about. That you remember that all those things that go right are also refuah, are also health. They're the gifts. Right? They're the close calls avoided that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't have to put us through. But the, particularly my line of work, this is an incredible thing because the second a program has, let's say 4 or 5 sources of inputs,
mm-hmm.
so that this system feeds that system, feeds that system, mm-hmm. the number of points of failure becomes measurable.
Mm-hmm.
The number of days that things actually come out on time, where the results are published without a problem on time, goes down very rapidly the more pieces something has. You think of how many things have to go right in order for a person to stay healthy, or even just to stay basically healthy. It really is mind-boggling. The third thing that we could see as chokhmah is the fact that the soul is connected to the body. This is something I think medieval philosophers were more worried about than we are. How is it that a physical object like an apple has the power to put a soul into a body? or to keep a soul in a body? Where does that come from? That there's a, I mean, if you think about it, and this is the way the Rishonim put it, sorry, the Rishonim are quoting a metrist, it's the way the Tana puts it. When a person makes a barrel and you have a hole in the barrel, all the wine runs out. Right? Hashem makes a body, puts these chalulim in it, mekavim chalulim in it, and that's what keeps the soul in. So that, in their perception, is the chokmah. This idea that a soul, a non-physical entity, could be tied to a body, thereby giving us that conflict that makes life a challenge and meaningful, is the chokmah, is the wisdom that we're praising in the bracha. The third approach, sorry, the fourth approach now, is that, right, the first we had was birth. This is the fourth. The fourth approach is that chokmah is the chokmah in creating the world. This is the Shibboleth HaLeket takes this approach. Man is a microcosm. And the example he gives is that the human spine he likens to a mountain chain, which, right, there are bumps, but the bumps are actually not starting at the skin level, they're starting because something underneath is pushing up to create bumps. And in this sense, and giving a million other examples, man is a microcosm for the universe. Which is redundant, microcosm means for the universe. Okay, whatever. The Mishkan is a microcosm, which is why the shedra, the spine of a human being, has a cord that runs through, right, the nerve that runs through, right, the actual bones, the vertebrae, and this is the chokmah of the wall of the Mishkan, which had planks that had a bar going through, and in all three we have the sense of chokmah. We have our bracha. We have Hashem b'chokma yosad aretz, which is from Mishlei, that Hashem founded the world on chokma. Our bracha, which attributes human being chokma to the creation of human beings, and those who built the Mishkan had to be a chacham lev, because the Mishkan is chokma. So the chokma in creating man is actually the chokma in creating everything. And just man is as complex as everything else combined. Therefore, we're actually we're complementing the chokmah of creation as a whole by noting the chokmah of its most complicated component. It's interesting, by the way, that the Sefer HaMenucha says that chokmah can't refer to the creation of the universe, the creation of man. Because kulam b'chachma sisa, the exact same pasuk. Hashem made everything with chachma, so why are we praising the creation of man as being particularly b'chachma? So as opposed to the Shibboleth HaLeket, which says the two are comparable, he says no. Hashem created us the chachma, meaning Hashem created us that we have chachma. Chachma is something that Hashem made man out of. It's a component of a human being, that we have wisdom. This gets back to the theme of that we're thanking God for the fact that souls stay in bodies. So those are the basic approaches to the bracha. I think with those approaches we could go through the words of the bracha. Yeah, okay. Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, which I think we've said plenty about so far. This bracha has the word Melech HaOlam, which we found in brachas on food, Bracha Dasham Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Shakol Nihyeh B'Dvaro. We find in brachas on mitzvos, but we don't necessarily find in brachas that are praise or thanks, Shevach or Hodoya. Right, Shemon Esrei, right, Bracha Dasham Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, no Melech HaOlam. Right, Bracha Shema. The Yotzer Or has, but the other brachos do not. So there's two possibilities for why it has Melech Olam. First one could be, if we say that this is a triad of brachos, it's because this bracha is the first of a set. And as the first of a set, it opens with Baruch, and to open with Baruch has a Melech Olam. The other one is to say that this is actually a bracha of, not of praise or of thanks, but this is a bracha more similar to the brachos on mitzvos and on food. It's on an action. And therefore, it has the concept of Melech Olam, which means that this bracha could either be physically associated to the event, and therefore has Melech Olam, or it's a bracha of praise. And this has halachic differences. You find various Rishonim discussing whether you say Asher Yetzer in Shul if you didn't go to the bathroom. And the difference being, if it's a bracha of praise, then you could say it without a particular cause. Right? Because the brachas that Melech Olam, because they are for a particular cause, would therefore require that you say you're right up to go into the bathroom. So we discussed the Chachma, Asher Yatzar Es Adam Chachma, that he shaped man with wisdom. The word for creation here is to give it shape, not to recreating ex nihilo, bara, but to give it tzura, a form. Because man was created from earth, right? This is the one thing where it explicitly, it's not created, man is not created from words, right? He's created from earth. Hashem breathes into it, this earth in the Shema, right? And that's how we have the creation of a human being, and therefore we use Asher Yatzar Es Adam B'Chochma. Uvaravo Nekavim Nekavim Chalulim Chalulim. He created, now this is Tzedek Nihilo, Chalulim Chalulim Nekuvim Nekuvim. So what's the difference between a Chalul and a Nekev? And there's even a debate as to whether or not the word should be Chalul. So Rashi, because again I found this bracha in Gemara, so I was able to find the Rashi. Rashi says, Nekavim are holes to the outside. So the mouth is a Nekev. The ears are nekavim, right? The other end of the digestive tract, right? The nose, those are nekavim. Chalulim are hollow organs. And that's why, by the way, he says, Badavka, that they are chalulim and not chalolim, because chalolim would be the holes. Mm-hmm. And he believes that God does not create holes. God creates things, and then the hole is what's not created. It's like, how do you make a donut hole, right? You don't. You wrap dough, and then there's a hole. So to his mind, the word is not chalulim, it's chalulim. Which didn't seem like much of a question, until you actually find out that there are people who did say chalulim, which is, in fact, Rashi. Where Rashi says that God created the holes that are in the middle of the heart. Mm-hmm. So that Hashem formed the heart, because that's made from the mud. Right, but the hole that's in the heart is bara, is created. This is a very significant point we'll get to when we talk about Yotzer Or. He creates light, uvori choshech. Again, this notion that creating the empty space that could have light but doesn't is a bria. It also gets into the question of, is evil created, or is evil a vacuum in which there is no good? Which that bracha continues on to. Oseh Shalom Uver Yitzah Kol is actually in the original Oseh Shalom Uver Yitzah Ra, and then they didn't want to discuss Ra, so Chazal changed it. But either way, this idea of creating holes has to do with whether or not absences are created or absences exist just de facto. So tied to the question of whether you say Chalulim or whether you say Chalolim is whether you believe evil is created or evil is a vacuum, an absence of good. Because that gets into the notion of what the word bara means. There happens to be the Avudraham who says it's chalulim with a dot in the lamed, because he holds chalulim means to make a hole. The action of digging holes is chalulim. They are the gingholes, would be heim chalulim. Heim chalim would be they have holes. Mm-hmm. So this is your question exactly. Our lashon is chalulim, but the reason why our lashon is chalulim is not because we ever resolved the dictum debate. It's because the word chalulim comes out to 124. So when you say chalulim, chalulim, you have 248, which is the Ramah, the 248 Evarim. So that's why we chose chalulim, not because we knew which one was right from a grammatical sense, but because from a gematria sense, the word chalulim reminds you of 248 Evarim. And the Abudraham at this point goes on a detour and starts listing all of the various organs and how amazing they are, and he goes on for, I don't know, 2 pages or so in the volume that I have, you know, listening how incredible it is. If you think about it, and this goes back to the idea of Chochma, the fact that there are organs like the kidneys which can separate food from waste, or the lungs which know to breathe in oxygen, breathe out waste, is Chochma in a very literal sense. Because the definition of sanity in halacha, a shote is somebody who doesn't know to take the nut and throw away the shell. So somebody who possesses chachma is somebody who knows how to what things are to be valued and what things are waste. So the idea of asher yatarta d'chachma not only refers to our consciousness and our thought, and even those other vectors other than our consciousness that goes into thought, it even goes into the mechanical wisdom of knowing the value of food and the lack of value of waste that goes into the body. The next, right, we have is, I'm burying my text. And I paused long enough that I lost the flow. Galui v'yadua, it is revealed and known, l'fnei chisei chavodecha. So why do we say l'fnei chisei chavodecha, before your throne, and not before you, before Hashem? And also, why is it galui v'yadua? So galui v'yadua happens to be a Russian in Daniel, in the hard part, in the Aramaic. He says, hu gale amikasa umasis rasa. He reveals the depth and the secret. Yoda ma b'chashocha, he knows what is in the darkness, unahora, and in the light, ime shere remains with him. So you see that he is gole, he reveals the depth and the secret, and then he knows what is in the dark and the light is with him. So that is the galui v'yadua, that he knows the secret, because so much of the workings of the body are not revealed to the eye. He knows everything going on inside. And that's the phrase, galui v'yadua, is a reference to that pasuk. L'fnei chisei chavodecha. So Sefer Menucha says very simply, we don't want to talk about God in the bathroom in the same sentence. So therefore, we don't say before you, we say before your throne. Sort of a distancing. Mm-hmm. The Avudraham takes a different approach. This is something we mentioned by Moda Ani, that the treasury of souls is portrayed in Midrashic literature as being a chest that is by the foot of the Kisei HaKavod. So Galui B'Yadua L'Pnei Kisei Chavodecha is because souls are stored before the Kisei HaKavod. This is also, we had said this about Modani L'Fanecha, that I acknowledge before you that you've given me a soul. So here we're talking about, it is known before your throne what? I'm jumping ahead. This chest where the souls are kept would have the soul back if the body were not healthy. Therefore, that mechiseich lodecho, that if one of them would open, one of them would close, I couldn't stand before you because the soul, the chest where souls are stored, would be kept before the. By the way, this metaphor is really actually pretty was what I was about to say. Very, it has real beauty to it, because if you picture a person who just got a treasure, who's counting each coin. So he puts in front of him the treasure chest and he opens it up and he takes out each coin one by one. So that's the mental image here. It's not just the chest that keeps by him. It is the thing that's open that Hashem is facing when he sits in his Kisei HaKavod. He's counting each soul. So we had discussed, Im Yipaseach Achad Mehem, if one of them would open, O Yisaseim Echad Mehem, or if one of them would close. And one way of understanding it is that Yipaseach refers to the Chalulim, because the Chalulim were the openings that are the cavities, not the opening to the outside. So if one of them would open up, if God forbid, somebody would have a chest injury and the heart was open, right? You couldn't live for an hour. One couldn't live for an hour, I apologize. Right? And Yisaseim is, if a person couldn't breathe, right, if the openings into the outside were closed, he also couldn't survive for an hour. Which, by the way, is why some people don't say Afilu Shalachos, because we said if any one of the holes were closed up, we couldn't survive for an hour. If one's ear was closed up, so one couldn't hear, one could survive for far longer than an hour. Right? If one couldn't eat, well, one survived for more than a shal. Not very long, but for more than a shal. At least until they, give them my fee, I guess. But there are holes. So when you say echad mehem, any one of them, to say a few shalachos, some of the Rishonim did not agree with this version that sounds a riff. Language isn't found in the Gemara, and therefore some of them omit the phrase Afilu Shalachos, and this comes down to Sturm even today, where some have the phrase, some do not. And there's a rule with brachos that a bracha A can only have one signature statement. You don't make a bracha thanking God for two things. You need to thank God for two things, you say two brachos. So Rofei Chol Basar Makli La'asos is one thing. Whatever this Makli La'asos, this miraculous, wondrous thing that he does, is the Rofei Chol Basar, is that he keeps each person alive. It can't be the and means that it's two things, rather Rofei Chol Basar, he keeps everyone alive, Makli La'asos, and this is a wonderful, incredible thing, this very thing that he does. The second thing that rule for brachos is that if the bracha is a paragraph, like this one is, where there's text before the closing Barakat Hashem, the last clause has to match the closing. So the same idea appears in two different variants before and after the bracha. Melech Ozer Moshiach Mogein Barakat Hashem Mogein Avraham. Right? We end the bracha with Magein, and then the closing, the concluding phrase is Moshiach Magein. So what that means is that the Pele is A, that we stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and B, that he keeps us healthy, and this is all one Pele. So, One way of understanding this, and it's very far from literal, but you find it, is that Hashem heals by providing Torah. Maybe not directly, but the existence of Torah in the world is what provides health. And it enables people to do pelagim, to do amazing things. Therefore, Rofei Chol Basar Mafli La'asos is actually a hint toward the fact that Hashem gives the Torah, and through the Torah we have the power to not only have a body, but to do things with that body. And this connects to this notion that the Chachma is that Hashem granted us Chachma, that Hashem made people of Chachma, of wisdom. And through this wisdom you could know Torah and you could do Torah. And the Reb Ben Yochar not only embraces this idea, he ties it to the birth idea by saying, by referring to the Torah that the infant is taught before he's born. And this Torah is a different kind of learning than the second time, when you have to learn it again a second time. And therefore, there's the body where these things are closed, and the body where those things are closed. And each one has its own Torah study, because the power that brings health to the world is Torah study. And therefore, with two different kinds of health, you have two different kinds of Torah study. The Avud Raham, who, if you remember, probably not, because I don't keep names set apart that well, and so therefore I just assume nobody else does. Yavud Raham, who understood Chachma to be the creation of the universe, Yavud Raham focuses on the fact that man was created last, and that all the universe is created to serve him. And therefore, as opposed to the Shiboli Aleket, who sees Chachma as being about the parallel between man and the creation of Kulam b'Chachma, sees of everything made in wisdom, he sees Chachma as being in man itself. And I forgot where I was going, so I apologize. The Tanhuma, the Rabbi Tanhuma, not the Medrash Tanhuma, says that the big pele, as we said in the beginning, is that the soul is attached to the body, which also ties to this idea of Torah, because without which you wouldn't have Torah, because Malachim don't need a Torah, because they don't have bodies. And the Torah was, they asked why is the Torah being given to man? Hashem said, well, what do you need it for? You don't have parents, you don't have this. You have no perfection that you need to pursue. And without a soul, you wouldn't have the soul. So without the soul, you wouldn't have the ability to study Torah. So therefore, he associates this hidden second theme of Torah as well. So what do we see from this bracha? We see from this bracha that we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for, that the universe was created to serve us, not just for our own health, but that we have a universe that enables us to eat and be healthy. B, that we're created in a way that gestation and life are totally different things, and yet both can coexist. And that C, we have wisdom. D, our body expresses an innate mechanical wisdom of being able to process food versus dross. Right? And this wisdom is also a chokhmah, in that Hashem was able to attach the spiritual to the physical, which then enables us to learn Torah and use the body constructively, because without a body there'd be no purpose to Torah. All these themes, different Rishonim developed in different ways, one from chokhmah, one from Machuz Lasos, one perhaps from Lifnei Kisei Chlodecha, but they all developed it, these themes, in different ways from the bracha. And we may miss brachos, so I'm going to stop here.